Hello, I'm Tom Weber. This is NPR News, and we are starting off this hour talking with the political junkie Ken Rudin, doing our last check-in of the year. Ken, good luck to you in 2017. It's good to talk to you today.
Good morning, Tom, and good luck to all of us.
1-800-242-2828. If you have a question for Ken Rudin, 651-227-6000. As we sum up 2016, Ken, not sure you can sum it up, but you've had several weeks to think about it. How would you finish this sentence? 2016 will be the year that what changed in America?
Well, and any other year, it would have been the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series because that was unheard. But look, you know something? I mean, not because we were wrong, and we were wrong, and all of us were wrong, but the thought of Donald Trump winning the election for the presidency, and not only that we didn't see it a year and a half in advance, we didn't see it 2 days in advance. So I kind of think that it may be the most unpredictable, most astonishing result in presidential election history. People talk about Dewey and Truman and all that stuff. But look, our polling is much more sophisticated than it was back then. I think we have we supposedly have an eye on the pulse more than ever, although as it turned out, we didn't. But I would say the election of Trump, the nomination of Trump, the candidacy of Trump, let alone the election in November of Trump, one of the most astonishing things of 2016 that I don't think anything else comes close.
You know, you mentioned eye on the pulse, the mission and the goal of journalists, political journalists, also trying to hold people accountable. Where do you see political journalism in a Trump administration? Does something go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's a great question because I don't think there's an answer to it, given the fact that Donald Trump has not had a press conference in a long, long time. We were whining during the campaign that Hillary Clinton hadn't had a press conference in so long. Well, neither has Donald Trump, and he's the president-elect and still hasn't met the media. But, you know, he does his thing through Twitter, which is so unheard of, and yet I think there's a sizable number of people in this country who say, well, that's fine. We're still hearing Donald Trump unfiltered from the rest of the country, from the rest of the news media. But the fact that he's talked about, you know, pulling permits or pulling accreditations for many newspapers and news organizations around the country, given the fact that he has such disdain and disgust for the so-called mainstream media, I think that relationship will be something very, very important. And I think the role of the media is probably going to be more important than ever because who else is going to report on him? Who else is going to hold him accountable as we should with any president?
But how do you hold something accountable if the people digesting the news are part of the population that doesn't trust the media, right? If the trust isn't there to begin with, and we see all these polls about trusts in systems as a whole, government, and all these big picture things that have been bedrocks of democracy, if that initial trust isn't there, who cares if we're holding anyone accountable if they're not going to read the story?
Tom, did you deliberately come up with these impossible to answer questions to torture me on a Tuesday morning? But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The public's regard for the media and the press is lower than ever. Donald Trump has shown that the media cannot be trusted. That they just take sides rather than the famous "We report, you decide." And so look, there's a lot of head scratching within newspaper and television and media circles, saying, "What do we do? What do we do wrong? How did we miss 2016? And how do we get it right?" And that's a tough question to answer because if you're critical of Donald Trump, I mean, if you listen to both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump supporters, both sides will say that the media failed them completely, that they over-covered so-called Hillary Clinton scandals and didn't cover Donald Trump scandals enough. Or the Trump people will say, you were focused on Donald Trump scandals when everybody cared about jobs and America's role in the world and not things like, you know, insulting women or minorities or handicapped or things like that. So we got it from both sides, and there's no easy answer, that's for sure.
On the politics side, the idea of, I remember when President Obama took office and Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader at the time, said, look, we have to make President Obama a one-term president. And it became pretty clear that the opposition at the time to President Obama coalesced around one or two themes. Do you see opposition here in this case by Democrats to all things Trump coalescing? Is it uniform? Is it messaged? Or is it just kind of yelling fire in the theater right now?
Yeah, I know. That's a great question. You know what? Carrie Millen needs to follow your role and learn these great... No, these are great questions. And this is very true, because you think of not only what Mitch McConnell did in 2010 by saying, my goal is to make Obama a one-term president. Think of what the Republicans in the Senate did in 2016 by refusing to even acknowledge the nomination of Merrick Garland as a nominee for the Supreme Court. I mean, I would have thought that the Republicans would pay for that kind of stalling and tactic, and yet no Republican paid for it. Matter of fact, and now Merrick Garland never got nominated, never got a hearing, and Donald Trump will have his own person. So if you look at what the Democrats are up to, we saw that there's a big fight going on among the Democrats for the Democratic National Committee chairmanship. Keith Ellison is probably the front runner, but who knows? There are a lot of people who still say, well, he said this a long time ago, and it's upsetting to me. And I'm not diminishing the questions about Keith Ellison, but the Democrats are not united for DNC chair. You saw with Nancy Pelosi when she was running for re-election as House leader, a Democratic leader in the House. She had tough opposition, too. So before the Democrats get their act together, I mean, before they be able to take on Donald Trump, they have to be as united as the Republicans showed they were in 2016. One way we could see the Democrats showing a unity is to see how they react and respond to the Trump cabinet choices, especially Rex Tillerson. But even if all 48 Democrats in the Senate vote no, you know, you're still going to have to peel off three Republicans to defeat it. And that's a tall order.
Do you see, as we talk here with political junkie Ken Rudin, do you see the Trump cabinet nominations getting any significant opposition? Is there focus on one or two? Is it writ large? We oppose them. I mean, how does this shape up when you think of that political fight in January?
Well, it's tough doing it. I mean, of course, the difference between, right now, Donald Trump has both houses of Congress as Republicans, which is what Barack Obama had when he was elected in 2008. So, you know, you do have your party on your side. I think the Democrats made things even worse for themselves by weakening the filibuster rule in the Senate. Obviously, they did it to hurt the Republicans, but now with a Republican president, it's going to hurt the Democrats. So, I mean, look, I think Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State is obviously concerned about past statements that Jeff Sessions, the nominee for Attorney General, has made. Although coming from the Senate, it's unlikely that Sessions will get any opposition from the from any of the 51 other Republicans. But, you know, I was thinking of it. I was going over the list, and I do this every year, of those who died, politicians who died of the year, you know, the people we lost in this year. And we lost four former cabinet members. We lost Melvin Laird, who was Nixon's Secretary of Defense. We lost Drew Lewis, who was Reagan's Secretary of Transportation. And we lost Janet Reno, who was Bill Clinton's Attorney General. If you add up all the opposition votes for the confirmation of Laird, Drew Lewis, and Janet Reno, it comes to a total of zero. There was not one single member of the Senate who voted against their confirmation. And I expect for Tillerson and others, it'll be 40 and above for those voting no.
But that said, though, the theory, right, is that the president gets to pick his or her team. The president gets to pick the cabinet, and the Senate says, all right, if that's who you want to be whatever position, okay.
Yeah, and that's what it should be. But of course, there is frustration among Democrats, and justifiably so, in the fact that they have a new president who refused to answer questions about his own taxes, about his own financial statements. They're obviously not going to let the nominees for certain issues, for certain positions, especially Tillerson, given his relationship and his financial relationship with those in Russia. So those questions will be asked. And again, maybe it's only going to be a Pyrrhic victory if there's a large number who votes no, but if they don't defeat any, but you know the Democrats will be out for blood.
We are finishing up the Obama presidency, and we know from plenty of profiles, Ken Rudin, that the goal, one of the many goals for the president, was the no drama Obama motif of no major scandals, like you saw with Bill Clinton, no big scandals under a lot of previous presidents, especially in that second term. We've seen some issues arise just here in the transition, and it's not to say that we won't have a no-drama Trump presidency, but again, I'll go back to my good questions that I keep asking you. Does it matter? Does it matter if we are going from a no-drama Obama era to a, I don't know, maybe a little bit of drama, Ken? Will that matter?
Well, I think it does matter, and I think all these things are temporary. Remember when Richard Nixon, when Richard Nixon won 49 states in 1972, people said, well, that's the Republican rule will last forever, and 2 years later came Watergate. You think of the Bill Clinton coalition in 1992 of women, blacks, Latinos, working class, then maybe the Democrats are back forever, and then 2 years later was Newt Gingrich and the Republican Revolution. So, look, clearly, the American people are looking for some kind of answer. And I think, you know, they didn't find it in Obama in the 8 years there. And that's, I think, it explains. And they certainly didn't find it in Hillary Clinton, although she did get 2.8 million votes more, but she didn't get the presidency. So as we saw with Obama in 2008, the American people were hungry for change. They voted for Obama. 2 years later, they didn't get what they wanted, and they voted in Republicans in Congress with 63 more seats. We'll see. They'll give Donald Trump his chances, but if he doesn't deliver, that's why they have elections.
What are your thoughts on whether Democrats are doing any productive work to address or reach out to voters who had voted for Obama 4 years ago, went to Trump this year for any number of reasons? I think a lot of them, those voters will tell you, were economic. Do you see the Democrats becoming a party that starts to actually appeal again to those voters?
Well, that's what the Democrats are fighting amongst themselves about. I'm sure you read about the interview that Barack Obama gave to David Axelrod for his podcast over the weekend. And basically, Obama said that Hillary Clinton, for all her, you know, how great she was, she did lose her way. She did take a victory for granted. She didn't really try to build on the economic successes, according to Obama, that the president has made over the past 8 years. And there will be people like Obama and up-and-coming Democrats, and there are a bunch of them, who are going to try to make the case that our message wasn't wrong, it just wasn't heard in 2016, and they're going to make sure it's heard in 2018. But predicting a Trump failure, we've been doing that for 16 months, and it still hasn't happened.
As you look to 2017, Ken, I don't know if you're scribbling down a list of the things you think will pop up, the things you're going to pay special attention to. What's making the list?
Well, I mean, obviously, the fact that Donald Trump has just rewritten, he's just thrown out the old rules and rewritten everything when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to Republican ideology, when it comes to the Democrats and how they will deal with defeat after not knowing defeat for 8 years in the presidency. So, look, everything has been so unpredictable. I think we don't need to look even past beyond January. Let's see what happens with the cabinet and the confirmation processes, and then watch how, if the Democrats do have a steady eye over what goes on with the Trump presidency, or whether they seem impotent to stop him, whether Trump is able to go over the heads of the Democrats and the media and just, you know, appeal to the people as he did in 2016.
I know you're a big Yankees fan, but I'm a Cubs fan, Ken, so I'll happily hold that one over your head for the rest of this offseason.
There's no way to root against what the Cubs did, even Cleveland as well, but it was a great World Series, and hats off to the Cubs. Boy, I mean, and then Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James, great sports news. Look, it's great political news, too. If you're a Trump supporter, if you're a Hillary supporter, you say, oh, my goodness, let's start all over again.
Ken Rudin, Political Junkie, our final check-in here of the year. Happy New Year to you, and thanks for being here this year.
Thank you, Tom. And really, Kerry has to work on those questions, but yours were really, really good today.
This is NPR News.